The first initiative under AUKUS is our shared ambition to support Australia.
A new underwater security pact surfaces. It's Monday, September 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, world leaders gather in New York. Another protest at the U.S. Capitol. China's video game rules. Dress code for Afghan women. News from space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States, Britain, and Australia are hailing the announcement of a new security pact that will see Australia getting U.S. nuclear-powered submarine technology in a bid to counter China in the Indo-Pacific. China has condemned the deal, and France is outraged after Australia abandoned its submarine deal with Paris. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin welcomed Australia's Foreign Secretary and Defense Secretary to the State Department to hail their new trilateral defense partnership known as AUKUS, which includes the United Kingdom.
The first initiative under AUKUS is our shared ambition to support Australia acquiring nuclear-powered submarines for the Royal Australian Navy.
The deal angered both China and France, with Beijing saying it undermines regional peace and stability. France has been working on a conventional submarine deal with Australia for years, and top officials in Paris said they felt stabbed in the back that the U.S. did not even consult them.
C'est une énorme déception.
It's a huge disappointment, especially as all the teams have been working hard for 5 years to ensure the proper implementation and smooth running of this major contract, which was to provide Australia with 12 conventionally powered submarines, as requested.
Blinken sought to tamp down the outrage in Paris, saying the U.S. wants Europe involved in the Pacific.
And as I said, France in particular is a vital partner on this, on so many other things. Stretching back a long, long time, but also stretching forward into the future.
Australia's defense minister tried to explain what happened with France, saying Canberra's navy advised them they needed nuclear-powered submarines instead of conventional submarines.
And so we looked at what options were available to us. The French have a version which was not superior to that operated by the United States and the United Kingdom.
Secretary Austin addressed China.
On the issue of China, let me just emphasize up front that, you know, this agreement, this relationship is not aimed at anything or anyone. It's the intent here is to help improve our trilateral cooperation and our capabilities across the board.
One expert told VOA the nuclear submarine deal shows China may have gone too far in pressuring Australia and others in the Indo-Pacific.
Those three countries to really focus on trying to deepen their, essentially their military technology sharing, which is already very deep, but to deepen it even more and focus on the Pacific is, you know, clearly, I think, a message that they take this very seriously and that they take the Chinese threat very seriously.
The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, was also upset about the deal and said this is a stark reminder that Europe has to make the issue of its strategic autonomy a priority, saying this shows that we must survive on our own. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
We have more on this story. You can find it online at Twitter at VOA Asia, as well as Facebook and the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit VOAnews.com. Photos show North Korea expanding uranium enrichment plant. Vietnamese President's Laos visit seen as effort to maintain influence. Boxer Senator Manny Pacquiao to run for Philippine president. Former Malaysia Prime Minister Najib may seek re-election to parliament despite conviction. China's new stock exchange eyes small and medium-sized companies. expanded coverage of all these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. New York this week will see one of its first large gatherings since the coronavirus pandemic, when more than 100 world leaders are expected to return to the United Nations for their annual meetings. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir reports.
A scaled-back version of the annual United Nations General Assembly is planned. World leaders have the option of attending in person with a very small delegation or sending a video message. Some 125 leaders are expected in New York, where officials will take on pressing issues.
Our world is heading towards a new abnormal, more chaotic, more insecure, more dangerous for everyone. We are moving in the wrong direction, and we are at a pivotal moment.
The week will begin with talks on climate action. Guterres and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will meet with a few dozen other leaders. Their goal is to encourage more ambitious commitments to slow global warming and fund adaptation and mitigation efforts ahead of a key climate conference 6 weeks from now in Scotland.
We really are out of time. We must act now to prevent further irreversible damage.
Halting the COVID-19 pandemic through global vaccination is the other urgent priority. The World Health Organization has set mid-2022 as its target for 70% of the world's population to be vaccinated. But poorer countries are not on track to reach this. On Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden will convene a virtual meeting on ways to curb the spread of the virus.
President Biden is committed to leading in concert with our allies and partners across the globe to stop the COVID-19 pandemic. We are building a coalition of governments, businesses, international institutions, and civil society to expand vaccine production, accelerate access to vaccines and life-saving treatment, and strengthen health systems around the globe.
But overshadowing these twin global crises is the latest geopolitical one, Afghanistan.
Afghanistan represents an enormous humanitarian challenge for the United Nations. And it's going to be UN agencies who are responsible for keeping Afghans alive during a period of hunger and political chaos.
G20 ministers meet Wednesday to discuss developments in Afghanistan. World leaders are also expected to address the issue during one-on-one talks. The Taliban's takeover is likely to figure prominently in Western leaders' speeches during the general debate, especially on the need to protect progress made on the rights of women and girls.
There's not very much the General Assembly can do to force the Taliban to protect those rights.
Starting Tuesday, leaders will address the General Assembly. One of the most anticipated statements will be from President Biden, who will address the General Assembly for the first time.
President Biden will speak to our top priorities, ending the COVID-19 pandemic, combating climate change, the climate crisis, and defending human rights, democracy, and the international rules-based order. All three are challenges that stretch across borders. They involve every single country on earth.
With only a week to cover many pressing issues, leaders will have little time to enjoy New York City, which has begun to reopen its museums, restaurants, and Broadway theaters. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, another large gathering at the U.S. Capitol. Happening now in Asia, Vaccine Minister Tara Cono said the country needs to stand up against China by cooperating with countries that share the same values, but said an increase in Japan's military power to confront China is not an ideal solution. He's one of several candidates to be Prime Minister of Japan. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad you're starting it with us here at VOA Asia. The Justice for J6 rally took place Saturday near the U.S. Capitol. Law enforcement officials worried about violence similar to what had occurred in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti describes the massive police presence to keep protesters and counter-protesters apart.
They were ready. Police en masse. Capitol Police, Washington, D.C. Police, County Police from nearby Virginia. Some in riot gear for this.
And may they have the rights that they are guaranteed under our constitutions.
Gay proof through the night.
The rally was in support of those arrested in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. 8 months ago, hundreds of people stormed the Capitol.
We can't breathe!
Most of them supporters of former President Donald Trump. Five people died from the day's events. At least 600 were arrested. About 40 remain in jail in Washington, D.C.
I'm calling for fair treatment, and they have not received fair treatment.
Can we get them out, or are they just locked up there until somebody says, hey, we got to let these folks out?
Police were initially worried about counter-protesters a kilometer away clashing with this group. They were actually in the crowd.
Don't break into Congress and try to overthrow the country. It's quite, that police officer,
lies. Yeah,
that police officer is a hero.
But as soon as you cross the line of irresponsibility, that right is not there anymore.
Well,
you have committed
question.
A crime.
Let me ask you this question. Irresponsibility, a poor judgment, in which there were absolutely people who did that. Does that mean that the rights that they have should be denied?
Rally organizer Matt Brainerd, a former Trump campaign aide, called those still in jail political prisoners.
This is about justice and disparate treatment and equal treatment under the law.
They threaten the lives of lawmakers. They threaten the lives of law enforcement people protecting those lawmakers. They threaten the United States government. Those aren't political prisoners. Those are criminals.
A U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee is investigating the January breach of the Capitol. Seven Democrats and two Republicans have requested records from several federal agencies, including the Trump White House.
There was no riot. There was no insurrection except that which happened on the part of the left.
VOA asked D.C. Metropolitan Police Chief Robert Conti how he deals with a rally in support of the people his officers arrested.
People come in and protest for things all the time. You know, I mean, we're just here to make sure that they're able to do it freely, do it peacefully, and that we have no issues.
A few were arrested with weapons or on outstanding warrants, but otherwise the rally was peaceful, with both sides still embracing their own beliefs. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News at the U.S. Capitol.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Few protesters remained outside the Shenzhen headquarters of embattled real estate developer China Evergrande Corporation after security personnel cleared the gathering the night before. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. China has new rules for minors playing online games, and the global gaming industry is wondering what's next. Michelle Quinn tells us more.
Playing video games for only 3 hours a week. That's the new rule in China for players 17 years old and younger. The global gaming industry is wondering what the long-term impact of these restrictions will be.
It's just been someone really yanked back on the reins, and we're waiting to see what happens when the horse starts to go.
For years, the Chinese government has worked to counter the influence of gaming on young people. Now, with the new rules, young gamers can play for 1 hour, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m.
So I think the government is saying, we were not kidding. We want our kids to stop playing games all the time.
In China, teenagers recently talked to Agence France-Presse about the new rules.
It's like there's a fight between two thoughts in my head. One says, this regulation not allowing me to play games is so annoying. And the other says, you're in your last year of high school. You should be studying. This is a good regulation. I feel conflicted.
Some of my classmates may use their parents' ID to register for the games or buy a game account without restrictions, which isn't too expensive anyways.
Another change? Gaming companies, not parents, enforce the rules. Tencent, the Shenzhen-based maker of Honor of Kings and League of Legends, is using facial recognition technology dubbed Midnight Patrol, which reportedly flags players who might be young and playing after curfew. If they don't check in with their face ID, they are blocked from the game. James Steyer, who has long advocated for more education about the effects of gaming, sees an opportunity in the new China gaming rules.
And I think it's the source of very positive, healthy discussion about how to find a healthy media diet, the right balance for your children and teenagers, and quite honestly, for yourself.
Many young players hoping to compete in esports, global competitive online gaming tournaments, won't be able to put in the time to hone their skills, says Warren Hong, 26, a gamer from Oakland, California. He started playing at 11 and got more serious as a teenager traveling to compete.
It's going to be a big hit for a lot of like up-and-coming Chinese gamers. If they really want to play these games, they're only going to get to play one game a day, three games a week. And that's just going to be really tough because you're going to have to compete with people from, you have to compete with people who are playing like 8 hours a day, every single day. And then it's going to be really hard to keep up with them.
In the short term, Hansen says the new rules in China might not affect gaming companies' bottom line. But the long-term forecast for the industry will likely change. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Cambodia has begun vaccinating children between the ages of 6 and 11 against the coronavirus. They're using the Chinese-made Sinovac vaccine. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Afghan women have launched a social media campaign sharing their photos in traditional Afghan dresses to protest what they call the Taliban's new dress code. Farkhuna Peymani reports.
Afghan women are taking to social media, posting their photos in traditional Afghan dresses. The online campaign started after a group of pro-Taliban female students rallied in Kabul wearing black abayas from head to toe, covering their faces and hands. Afghan women activists say the attire worn in the pro-Taliban rally does not represent Afghan culture.
The burqa, or women covering their faces, is not part of Afghan culture. Like many other women, I protested by posting my traditional Afghan clothes, which represent Afghanistan's culture, or Afghan women's dresses.
Afghan women activists say women now living under the Taliban's rule should have the freedom to choose what they want to wear.
In my personal opinion, no dress code should be forced on women, particularly in Afghanistan, where everyone is Muslim and all know how to dress in accordance to the Islamic cultural and social values.
But some Afghans say the Afghan diaspora should focus on the more critical issues facing women in Afghanistan.
Social media campaigns on how women should dress is a positive move. But at this critical time, important issues such as women employment, education, political participation, and protection of the two decades of gains women made should be given the priority.
Women in Afghanistan and across the world have been protesting against the Taliban's strict restrictions on women. The Taliban took control of Afghanistan last month after the Afghan government collapsed and the U.S. withdrew its troops from the country. Farhunda Paimani, VOA News, Washington.
Another commercial spaceflight company is launching into the space tourism business, plus more spacewalks outside of the International Space Station, and even some beauty tips from astronauts on board. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
Private spaceflight company SpaceX joined Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic as the latest member of the Space Tourism Club. All four passengers aboard the Dragon capsule are amateur astronauts, a first in 60 years of human spaceflight. They include two contest winners, a cancer-surviving healthcare worker, and a 38-year-old billionaire CEO financing the entire operation. The three-day mission called Inspiration 4 will circle the planet at an altitude of roughly 540 kilometers. Inspiration 4's crew brings to 14 the number of people in space at a given time, which is a record high from the previous number, 13.
I think there's a lot of points to our mission, and a big one is to inspire people to push boundaries. And we're pushing boundaries in a lot of different ways. The $200 million fundraising effort for St. Jude is the largest fundraising effort that St. Jude has ever seen. And that money is going to go to cancer research and to helping kids and to fund treatment.
Haley Arsenault was referring to St. Jude Children's Hospital, a nonprofit that treats childhood cancers, where she was a patient and is now a physician's assistant. A bone cancer diagnosis when she was 10 meant much of her thigh had to be replaced with a titanium rod. Arsenault is now the youngest American ever in space and the first to make the trip with a prosthesis. The capsule carries items intended for a fundraising auction to benefit St. Jude. In other news, fresh off the heels of last week's spacewalk, two astronauts aboard the ISS ventured out to install a mounting bracket and work on other primary tasks. The nearly seven-hour job featured ESA astronaut Tomas Pesquet and Japan's Akihiko Hoshide. Their work sets up a future spacewalk to install another modern solar array. And finally,
I'm going to go ahead and put some of this no-rinse shampoo, and then I go ahead and I rub it in a little bit, just like you would on Earth. Rub that in.
From inside the ISS, NASA astronaut Megan MacArthur shares tips for space travelers. As commercial spaceflight takes off, advice from grooming to eating to putting on clothes may become increasingly relevant to those who can afford the trip. For now, though, trips are relatively short, and even the SpaceX three-day journey involves zero showers, one toilet, and crew chairs as beds. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Technology during the pandemic is taking us to places we might not otherwise visit. Matt Dibble explains.
This youth leadership program in North Carolina usually takes a trip each year to celebrate its graduating seniors. But during the pandemic, there was no leaving home.
So I said, well, how can we do something so that they are at least being given the experience of traveling?
Evana Ross, director of the program, landed on the idea of a virtual tour with an Israeli company called Hapator. The students chose Australia for their destination.
Come and join me as we learn all about Australia's plants and animals.
The tour was live streamed and interactive.
He was very engaged with us. He made it fun. He was funny. I saw different mountain structures, different types of birds. It looked like a whole new world, you know.
Dominic DeRozzi has been a professional tour guide in San Francisco for over 30 years. But in 2020,
my normal work schedule just collapsed.
With a few pieces of equipment and software from Hapator, he was ready for live streaming.
You are on the main drag of Chinatown.
During the tour, participants can ask questions.
The fortune cookie, as we know it, was invented right here in San Francisco.
Even as travel to the city is picking up, DeRozzi thinks virtual tours, which started about $14, are here to stay.
It comes at a good value to give people, you know, a one-hour slice of a city or a destination.
We never try to replace real tourism. We're trying to create an additional exposure to new places, maybe a niche destination.
Almost like being there, minus the smells and the tastes. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us today. Continue with us online. We're at Facebook at VOA Asia, also on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And of course, you can find our programs at our website, voanews.com. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.